Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, supported by Servier Pharmaceuticals, we had the pleasure of speaking with Jenny W. Taylor, MD, MPH, about the FDA approval of vorasidenib for patients with IDH-positive grade 2 astrocytoma or oligodendroglioma. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Taylor discussed the significance of this approval, key data from the pivotal INDIGO trial, and where vorasidenib fits into the astrocytoma and oligodendroglioma treatment paradigms. Thank you so much, Dr. Taylor, for taking the time to speak with us today about the FDA approval of vorasidenib in IDH1 and 2 positive astrocytoma and oligodendroglioma. So just to start off, what is the significance of this approval and how does it address an unmet need for this patient population?
Yes, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to have an opportunity to talk on this really groundbreaking new development for our patients. And I think that the main significance here is this is really the first drug in several decades that's been approved to demonstrate effectiveness for patients with IDH mutant tumors for whom often live for several decades and have significant consequences often of more traditional treatments such as surgical approaches, traditional chemotherapy approaches, and radiation that can often create more of an impact on their quality of life and cognitive outcomes. And so to have a new well-tolerated treatment that may delay the need for some of those more aggressive therapies is really quite exciting.
Diving into some of the details here, what were some of the key efficacy findings from the pivotal INDIGO trial?
The key findings for the INDIGO study was taking patients who were at least 1 year and no more than 5 years out from their most recent surgical resection of an IDH mutant grade 2 glioma. And these patients were felt to have relatively stable seizure control. These patients were fairly young and healthy, and they were randomized to either vorasidenib or to a placebo. And then these patients were sequentially followed every 3 months with MRI findings and daily dosing of this treatment. And the key clinical findings that were discussed and released at the ASCO meeting in June of 2023 was a significant improvement in progression-free survival for the patients who had received vorasidenib of 27.7 months versus placebo of 11.1 months. And similarly, the key secondary outcome of time to new intervention, so kind of the concept of how much change is enough change to do something different, was not reached for the patients in the vorasidenib arm and was 17.8 months for the placebo arm. So a significant improvement in both the progression-free survival and this key secondary outcome of time to new intervention. Now, of course, what's really key here is does this improve overall survival? And given how long these patients may live, you know, again, potentially up to decades, I think we really can't answer that question at this point. And that is, I think, a key and important limitation of the effect of this new treatment on overall survival and on tumor biology is still very much to be determined. I think an also interesting key finding from the INDIGO study was that when patients were found to progress radiologically, there was a central review of the questionable MRI scans, and then patients underwent an unblinding process. So then the patients who were receiving placebo were given the opportunity to cross over and to receive vorasidenib, and of course the patients who were receiving vorasidenib went on to receive additional treatment. I think that this crossover design, though, makes a lot of sense. I think we'll potentially limit the impact of our understanding of vorasidenib on overall survival, given that, you know, essentially most patients will end up crossing over, and whether they had started with vorasidenib or ended up on vorasidenib will to be determined. aside from the overall survival, I think there are some key secondary outcome measures that we're still very anxiously awaiting to learn more about with more follow-up time for patients, both impacts of this treatment on patients' quality of life, their neurocognitive outcomes, which were very well prospectively captured during the clinical trial, as well as its impact on seizure control. So I think these very clinically based outcomes will also be very helpful for us to understand some of the impact of this treatment for patients longer term.
What is the safety profile of vorasidenib?
Yeah, so the most common side effect that was noted was liver toxicity, and this was felt to be manageable, you know, very few grade 3 toxicities, but certainly not uncommon for grade 1-2 toxicities. Unfortunately, it was my understanding is that it was found to be reversible. So when patients stopped drug or were dose reduced on drug, the liver abnormalities were resolved over time. And I think the other big, you know, unknown side effect here is the effect of vorasidenib on embryo and fetal development. And I think that the one of the big concerns and questions that we have for patients is this is an potentially an ongoing treatment for an open-ended amount of time, unlike a lot of the medications that we've historically used that have either a course of radiation or a year or so of alkylating chemotherapy or combination therapy, that the open-endedness of this and therefore its impact on family planning for a group of patients that are often young and in the midst of figuring out their family planning is certainly something that we're going to need to learn to navigate.
What is important to note about the differences between the Indigo population and the approvals indication, and what are some of the implications of this?
So the indication for vorasidenib is fairly similar to the Indigo population. So the official indication is for patients who either have an IDH1 or an IDH2 mutation. They're adult patients or pediatric patients greater than 12 years old, and we haven't done a lot of research on those younger patients per se. And they either can have astrocytomas or oligodendrogliomas, but the current indication, again, similar to the Indigo clinical trial, is for grade 2 tumors. And the indication also highlights patients who have received biopsy, subtotal resection, or gross total resection. And that's a little bit different than the Indigo indication, where the patients needed to have measurable disease. So the indication is a little bit more broad, including patients who've had gross total resection, so you don't have to have measurable disease in order to go on the drug. And there is no time limit. So some of these, the patients in Indigo, again, were either a year from their surgery or 5 years from their surgery, but the indication is a bit more comprehensive. So certainly some of these patients may have slow-growing disease or not need additional therapy after initial surgery outside of that window. And so I think that helps as far as getting these patients access to this new and exciting medication. I think it also is important to acknowledge who is not included in this. And I think this is going to be a huge challenge and opportunity for the neuro-oncology community. I think most of the Indigo patients all had non-enhancing disease. So these are sort of felt to be relatively slow-growing tumors. Whether patients with enhancing grade 2 tumors do respond to vorasidenib is something that we don't necessarily know. Similarly, the grade of tumor, grade 2 versus grade 3, is maybe not quite as clearly black and white as we have historically thought. And so are there grade 3 patients, for example, who may benefit from this drug eventually? We don't have those answers either. I think sometimes these grade 2 tumors have also received a treatment already. They may have had radiation, they may have had chemotherapy. And so what we don't know is whether there's a role for vorasidenib after those initial treatments with evidence of non-enhancing slow-growing disease. So while I think the indication is very similar to what we know, which is in the Indigo population, I think there's also a lot of questions of who may also benefit, and we don't have those answers yet. This really is a huge breakthrough for the neuro-oncology community and for our brain tumor patients. We've been fairly limited in the treatments that we know to be helpful. And while we have a lot of questions left to be answered, you know, this is sort of a new dawn and a new horizon of of knowing that for at least a subpopulation of IDH mutant patients, that they really do seem to benefit from inhibition of this drug. I think that there's a lot of outcomes that are still going to need to be important that we're going to need to see through. And again, the quality of life issues, the cognitive issues, the seizures, which are such impactful components for our patients, I think are also things that we will learn from long-term survival data, follow-up data from the Indigo study. And I think there's, while there's a lot of enthusiasm, I think we have to be cautiously optimistic. Again, the impact of this drug as a biological agent that potentially is actually changing how these tumors may evolve over time. It may change how they respond to additional treatments like radiation and surgery after progression, I think is a lot of questions are going to kind of come up in that sense. Again, the indications of who may benefit from this drug. Is it safe and effective in different combinations? I think there's, again, a lot of questions to be determined, but it's certainly a huge first step.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave On Air, supported by Servier Pharmaceuticals. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On X, follow us at Enclave. On Facebook, like us at Enclave, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave On Air.